we're on, but I lost the sound. So, all right, here we go. So, the sound cut off. Sorry, this is the Windmill Sports Show coming to you live from the Club County. Did you hear that, Josh? It didn't fade out. It just went away. So, sometimes it's like they mic dropped
it. I know. It sounded like a zap, like as if there were technical difficulties. But I don't know what you mean. You get used to the music kind of leading you in, though. And it throws you off.
Yes, that's Josh Nagel from Sportsline. He's my turn it off to get me to talk. All right, our board guy's over there. He's busting my chops. So I'm your host, Kenny B. Like I said, here with Josh Nagel from Sportsline. John Stevens is running a little bit late. Hopefully, be down here by about 5:30. You know, to talk sports. So, what's going on, Josh? I went to the boxing matches last night. You know, or last week. I had Terry Lane or Tommy Lane on a few weeks ago. They were putting on the Oscar Valdez card. And it was pretty exciting. Terry and Tommy Lane from Let's Get It On Promotion put the big card on out of the convention center where Oscar Valdez fought for the featherweight championship. Actually defended the featherweight championship of the world, which turned out to be a pretty good fight. He was such a big favorite. I did some research and talking to some pundits of the boxing, and they said that the over seemed like the best bet. So I made a pretty hefty wager on over 7.5 rounds in that fight, and we went to the fight. Terry and Tommy hooked us up with ringside tickets, so we were sitting right there watching. So got to meet Bob Arum, talked to Bob Arum for a little bit, which is pretty interesting. He's really getting up there long in the tooth, so to speak.
Correct.
You know,
he is.
And he was a fan favorite, and it was exciting matches. They put on a fantastic card. I was at the fight, and I knew it was on ESPN, and I knew it was on ringside, and so I counted down the rings. Like I said, I had over 7.5. So when we're in the eighth round, I had to get halfway through the eighth round to book the victory, and I stood up and yelled, "Victory!" Or no, winner. Excuse me. I yelled "winner" as loud as I could. So my buddy Tommy Thompson, everybody, they were trying to see if they could hear it on the ESPN, but it got drowned out. But with that being said, great card. JJ got the local kid, you know, his pro debut. He got his first victory. The undercard was a war, an absolute war, which we knew. The kid from Stockton came up, and he traveled really, really big. And so the place was packed. Great, you know, Top Rank did a great job, and you know, I had a great time, Josh. I really did.
Yeah, that's awesome. Can it look like it? I said, I wish I could have joined you. I think you texted me on Saturday, I want to say early afternoon-ish, and said, "Hey, can you make it?" I said, "Unfortunately, I had to cover a shift at work." And you said, "Any way you could, you know, sneak out of it?" I said, "Man, if there's any way," I said, "Who would have thought on the day you offered me front row boxing tickets that I wouldn't be able to make it?" I'd done anything to make it if I could. I couldn't. But then I mentioned before the show, it came on, you know, the TV at work, and I didn't realize it was going to be, you know, featured on the main ESPN channel. And you're right, everything I saw adds up to what you're saying. I don't say surprised, but I was pleased to see what a full crowd it was. A really competitive, you know, I saw only the main event, but it was a competitive fight. So that always, you know, helps as well, especially, as you mentioned, between the lower weights. Not that knockouts aren't possible. The over is usually safe because they tend to be boxers, you know, with speed and agility, whatever, power is not the, you know, main, the core skill. And on top of all that, it just had the feeling of a big production, especially, like I said, when you see it on the main ESPN channel. But all the you know, basically pageantry surrounding it, as you mentioned, some big boxing luminaries were around there. I also just like even the commentating team. You know, Joe Tessitore is on there, and it just sounds right. I mean, his voice has become real distinctive with boxing, and it's pretty cool. I just remember when I've been to past boxing events, and you see guys like, you know, Teddy Atlas and the like, some of the you know, famous commentators and/or promoters, and just make it a big deal. And as I'm sure you're aware, it's kind of funny because they're all from Reno anyway, but all the big referees were there. Vic Draculich and all the local well-known guys were doing it. In fact, Vic did the main event, right? So yeah, nonetheless, I got a little glimpse of it on TV, but I wish I'd, you know, been there with you guys, because it sounded like
the whole card was good, Josh. It really was. Ran into Chris Ault, got to talk to Big Daddy Chris Ault a little bit, which is always exciting, you know, being a Pac fan. So, but you know, Terry and Tommy Lane, like I said, did such a great job at this event. Hopefully it's a prequel to what, you know, future events we can hold here in the locally, because, you know, everybody, if you're a boxing fan, boxing is so much history in Reno when it comes to boxing, Josh. That's what's crazy. You know, hopefully we can get them back out there.
And as you know, you're right. We've had the Lanes on in the past. We've talked about that, the idea that it's kind of funny, similar to where Reno also used to be a huge, you know, gambling mecca in the world. Boxing, it was much bigger here back in the day before, you know, Vegas became the epicenter of the huge marquee fights or whatnot. I mean, Reno has that rich history, but even as recently as we know, over the past couple of decades, we used to have the Showtime and HBO cards, and we talked about what it's going to take to sort of revive it, because I mean, it just makes sense with given the rich history, and there are a lot of boxing aficionados here to have those events come up more often.
Sure, absolutely. So thanks, shout out, and thanks to Terry and Tommy Lane from Let's Get It On Promotions, and you know, can't wait to see him back. Speaking of boxing, Josh, we have this. There's a big fight. You know, Rui. You know, let's just talk a little bit about what we've seen in the last. You know, let's talk about the Raptors, and some guy wins $100,000 on a future bet on the Raptors. You know, we have the Blues. You know, the same thing. You know, excuse me, guy won $100,000 on the Blues. You know, the Raptors dethroned the Golden State Warriors. And, you know, and we got Ruiz, you know, coming knocking out Deontay Wilder. You know, kind of a crazy turn of events. And here we are tomorrow. John the Hawk Stevens is on his way. He just texted me, so we're waiting for you, John. But, you know, not obviously we have Manny Pacquiao and Keith Thurman. You know, they're going to get it on July 20th. But there's a big fight tomorrow, Tyson Fury versus Tom Schwartz. Can lightning strike again, Josh? You know, I was pulling up some of this, and, you know, Schwartz, he's 24-0 with 16 knockouts. I mean, he is undefeated. You know, on the other side of the coin, you know, Tyson is 27-0-1 with 19 knockouts. Heavyweight fight? I don't know. I mean, can lightning strike?
Yeah, you think it's funny. You mentioned these big boxing upsets do happen every so often, and you're right, but it really tends to be maybe once or twice a year, and you wonder if that time has passed with the Ruiz upset of Anthony Joshua. But he said, first of all, it's heavyweights. You never know what could happen. Of course, by just the pure nature of the weight class, they hit harder than the others, which makes it even more volatile. What guy happened to land one shot? You know, he's in there for whatever reason. You know, the promotions got together and made this match. It's not as if, you know, the guy doesn't belong there. But for what it's worth, I'm a Tyson Fury doubter to begin with. I mean, as it is, I thought he lost the draw with Deontay Wilder, despite everyone loved how he got up from the 12th round down and stuff, and that was fine.
The Undertaker get up.
Right, but I still felt like Wilder won the fight, even though it was close. I was surprised it was a draw. I saw what he did boxing-wise. But I kind of felt the same thing as you and I have talked about when he, quote, won the title from Vladimir Klitschko, one of the most boring heavyweight title fights ever witnessed. I just feel like Tyson Fury is not that great. He really, I mean.
Well, that's kind of where I'm at, Josh. And to get 14-1 on Schwartz, I mean, that's, you know, all he did after he won the belt, Josh, is he went to pubs, drank beer, got addicted to drugs.
All right, one thing we're talking about, Fury's had his share of bouts with both alcoholism and mental illness. And so you never even know.
Narcotics.
Yes, and I've seen some various interviews with him recently, and it's sort of, I say, concerning or whatever, but he almost seems too casual. Where, you know, I know you follow Twitter, but my Twitter feeds and Facebook and everything else, and you see, and because he seems like such a gregarious guy, they love to interview him because he does.
Sure, I agree.
Right, he does every media thing they ask. So you see all these full length interviews lately with Tyson Fury, and almost sometimes you get the feeling, man, the guy's almost too relaxed, like he just doesn't care, and that's worrisome sometimes.
You know, I think I'm going to take a little flyer. He's 1-35. So to put that into betting terms, you'd have to bet $35 to win $1.
Right.
But I kind of like the other side. You know, why not put $50 on Schwartz at 14-1 and maybe turn a $50 bill into
$700?
Yeah. I mean, why not? The guy, like I said, he's 14-0 with 16 knockouts. He's a big guy, 6'5", you know, 6'5 and a half. And he's right there. And if you look at the total rounds in this, Josh, you know, we talked a little bit about me having the over in the Oscar Valdez fight, the over 7.5 rounds. The total rounds for this heavyweight fight tomorrow between Fury and Schwartz is 9.5, and it opened up at the under being -150. It's went up a little bit further to 9.5 under 160 now, under 160. So I think that, you know, maybe can Schwartz – can he win a decision? I don't know,
but you're right. I was tempted to take the over as well, just on that principle. That's what Tyson Fury, as he did against Wilder, he's more so known as a heavyweight, as the boxing style type, not the guy with great knockout power. He's the guy with the fundamentals, with the jab, with the movement. And so, of course, such a huge gap in the price suggests the under. They think that Fury's probably going to find a way to stop him. You know what, Ken, honestly, before I jump in there, I probably would. I'll see what's on YouTube tonight of Schwartz and just see, do you get the feeling that, you know, how does he look competent? But nonetheless, if I was going to take a shot at that, yeah, I'd probably take the over, only because Fury's not known as a knockout artist.
That's what I was going to say. Let's look at what happened in the Wilder fight with the guy that beat Wilder, yeah. Ruiz. Wilder has a glass chin. I mean, he does. I mean, and I think Rui's shown that, and Fury was.
Oh, you mean Joshua or
excuse
Wilder?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to say here is Fury. He's a clinch kind of. He's a boring fighter. I mean, he really
totally.
Is. He's
he
a
mucks
boring
it up.
Fighter.
Right.
Right. And, I mean, why can't this game? Why can't this game get over? Game. I call the fight game. Why can't this fight get over? Get over 9.5 and take the plus 140. I don't know. Understand why the money's coming in. I mean, he. Obviously, Fury's he's got a sledgehammer chin. I mean, the shot that he took and got up from, I can't imagine Swartz bringing anything bigger than that shot to the fight to get Fury out of there. But and I look at this, I go, man, there's just some. I think there's some value in the plus 140.
Exactly.
And I'm kind of going to defer to you on this too, Josh, because I'm interested. You said you're going to watch some YouTube on him tonight. I'm interested in what your opinion is going to be on this because. I think I'm going to have a little bit of money on the over.
No, I like that as well. I said it's where I lean. I have to see a little of Schwartz. Honestly, until this fight was announced, I hadn't heard of him. But it's not unlike, Ken, as you just mentioned, with Fury not being the question, barring some miracle shot. But it's like if you had a basketball game where one team's just super high scoring, top offensive team in the league, and the other one's sort of mediocre. Well, you wonder about that team holding up their end of the deal. There's no doubt the high scoring team will do their part, right? That's the same thing here. Like when you're looking toward the over in this one, yes, you're not really. You're kind of crossing out the idea of Fury getting stopped. So it's can Schwartz hang in there? Does he have the skill and the stamina and all that? And the only thing you could think of in terms of knockout, said that probably that one shot, but if he faces a real inferior opponent, it's a attrition thing with Fury, right? I mean, accumulation over the rounds, maybe it gets them out of there. But again, I think the line is what it is just because people just expect the dominant guy to take him out early.
And let's look at the record like we said too, Josh. 24-0, 16 knockouts for Schwartz. So he's had eight decisions that went the distance. And I guarantee, I mean, I can't guarantee it, but I would come to think that his punch can't get Fury out of there. I mean, the more I'm looking at this, it just seems like an over plus 140. There's value there. You know, obviously when it comes to sports wagering, you're looking for value. And I think there's value there in the over 140. You know, I think Fury's going to, if he gets hurt, he's going to hold. There's nothing to say that Schwartz doesn't have a strong chin too. He hasn't been put down.
Right.
For 24-0, 16 knockouts. Yeah, I don't know.
It's kind of funny, by the way, I wanted to mention when you brought up having the over in that fight last week. It's a mistake a lot of people make. I think it's funny because I've had some people who made that following me where I've done some boxing and sports line, whatever. I liked an over in a certain fight. And you say, over 9.5, and yeah, that's what we're playing. And then, they get through the eighth round and goes to the ninth. People start celebrating. They'll realize, no, you don't understand. Mm-hmm. 9.5 means it has to go into the tenth, halfway through the tenth. You get through the ninth, that doesn't win it for you.
That's
but people
get
confused that all the time because the number is 9. You realize it's actually the round following it is the number you need to be mm-hmm. paying attention to. So, one time, it's kind of funny. A long time ago, I had the over in an Oscar De La Hoya fight, and who was his opponent? I'd have to look up. I remember, I thought he'd probably take the guy out, but it was a pretty tough dude. And same thing with the over was like 10.5. It was so funny, Ken. I thought I lost. It was so close. He knocked the guy. He ended up like right under the wire. He knocked the guy down. Oh yeah, it was Vargas. Back in the day. He hit him with an uppercut that was so clean, and I knew if he got counted out that was going to be an under. So I'm praying the guy gets up. He does. I'm like, come on. And I'm looking at the clock and everything. I need him to hang in there for like 5 more seconds. Oscar, jumps on him. He throws another flurry, and the ref stops it. And I was absolutely convinced that I had still lost it by like a couple seconds.
I remember this fight.
Thankfully, I took my ticket. I didn't even know. I went down to the casino where I bet. I had a big bet on. I'm like, well, let's not overreact. But you couldn't even get the official time anywhere. So I ended up going to the casino and finding that on the big scoreboard that the over was highlighted on the how on earth, and he made it by like a second.
Yep.
So I remember thinking, wow, I mean, that's one of those where.
You know what you do there, Josh? You cash that ticket immediately.
Exactly.
Immediately.
Exactly. Because I remember watching it at home counting, like with the little, the little timer that they have in the corner, watching when the ref waved it off. I'm like, you're kidding me. I just lost that by 2 seconds. But then just to be sure, I went to the sports book and instead, they barely got in there.
That's funny. That's a good story. It happens all the time, though, like you said. So big fight tomorrow, like we're talking about Tyson Fury versus Schwartz. Fury 27-0 with 19 knockouts. Big, obviously he's 6'9", big boy. Schwartz is going to come in at 24-0 with 16 knockouts, 6'5", 6'5.5". And it looks like, hopefully heavyweight boxing is back. I mean, I don't want this to be a whitewash. I want this to be a good competitive fight, Josh. And, and maybe there is a little bit of value with Schwartz, just because it goes back to what you're saying. I just don't know what product I'm going to get with Tyson Fury. I just don't know what product I'm going to get.
Exactly. Like you said, it's the only thing out there. I mean, it was nice to see against Wilder, similar with Joshua. We want to see these guys who just seem like, heavyweight was so top heavy. Was there anyone out there that could, you know, compete basically in terms of, you know, top five guys who were lesser known. Tyson Fury, you know, had beaten Klitschko, but we wanted to see him against upper tier competition as well. And so to me, the respect to Fury was just simply that he was competitive against Wilder. It was just great to see, you know, good heavyweight fight. Same thing with the Ruiz, proven that these two guys, that, you know, Joshua Wilder, aren't necessarily just head and shoulders above everyone else. But again, but as a standalone guy, I mean, that's where he kind of performed above his peak that night, you know, and almost won the title against the guy he's supposed to crush, as minus 35 would suggest. Does he have the same motivation?
No, I agree. I'm with you. I mean, and it just goes to show you that, you know, anything can happen in boxing with what Ruiz just did. Later in the month, too, let's get into this real quick, Josh. Manny Pacquiao is going to fight Keith Thurman. Thurman's up to minus 130. I know when this first opened, I think it was minus 110, minus 110, right in that area. You might, maybe a slight juice to Thurman, but Thurman's moved up to minus, already to minus 130. Where are we at real quick in this fight and with Pacquiao in his career?
Yeah, you know what? I find this a fascinating fight. Can I just put it this way? So far on the calendar this year, it's the one I've most looked forward to. Like, I wasn't expecting, like, again, the exciting heavyweight fights. But in terms of what I'm going to circle and make a point to watch, Keith Thurman, Manny Pacquiao, hold some curiosity for sure. Because if you know about Keith Thurman, the guy is – he's intriguing and also a frustrating guy. I mean, he's undefeated. I think he's about 29 or maybe he's just about to turn 30 years old. He's had some injuries over time. He's an undefeated, you know, welterweight title holder. And if you just watch him, you know, in the interviews at the press conference, he wins the press conference every time. He's extremely bright. He's articulate. He's funny. He comes across, he's one of those, you know, sell ice to the Eskimos kind of guy. You could listen to a 10-minute interview with him and just think, without ever watching, this guy must be the greatest fighter ever walked the face of the earth, because he comes off as that confident in himself. His track record sort of shows, I won't say it shows otherwise, he's undefeated, but there's been some questions about his level of competition hasn't been that great. I mean, for the longest time, Errol Spence has been the big fight out there. Somehow that hasn't happened, right? Thurman's had huge bouts of inactivity due to various injuries, and he struggled with guys who, if he's as good as he claims to be, he shouldn't struggle with. He almost got knocked out on a body shot by a journeyman, Louis Collazo, a couple years ago. Guys, I've probably heard of Sean Porter, who was like a running mate with him, a friend of his. He fought him. I thought Porter won the fight, but that was a split decision win. And he also fought Danny Garcia to a split decision win, a guy who was previously unbeaten. So the real top guys he's fought with, it's been airtight, super close. He's won those decisions. Now, so it's like, is Thurman the real deal or not against an aging Pacquiao who, despite how he looked against Floyd or whatnot and losing the decision to Jeff Horn, but there are times, there's still recent fights where 40 years old or whatever, Pacquiao still appears to be, you know, world-class level guy. So I'm curious. I feel like it's priced correctly. I'm just not so sure, you know, if I'm buying into Thurman just yet. But I just think if we've seen, you know, if the good Pacquiao shows up, I think Thurman's in some trouble. He's got more power than most guys Thurman's faced.
Does Pac retire if he loses this fight real quick? We have to go to commercial break. Real quick.
No, well, he was supposed to retire many fights ago, so I would say
when he was running for the Senate or
exactly.
Or whatever,
so yeah. I'd say we probably haven't seen the last of him either way.
All right, good deal. Let's head off to our next commercial or first commercial break. We come back, we'll continue talking sports on ESPN 94.5 FM. Josh and I are back here at the Club County. We're still waiting for John the Hawk Stevens. He's in route. He'll be here. Make sure you like the show on Facebook at Kenny B ESPN Sports Handicapping. Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping. And Josh Nagel has multiple articles, as he will with college football all year round, but college football right around the corner too, Josh. Josh Nagel 1 on Twitter and at Sportsline, Josh Nagel. Josh Nagel. Josh?
All right, thanks, Ken. Yeah, and you're right. College football right around the corner. We saw right now William Hill's got week one point spreads posted in live. You could bet it right now if you wanted to, even though your first kickoff's on Saturday, August 24th. It's going to be honest quicker than we realize, and I went out of town a couple of weeks ago. I was curious what's out there. Give me some reading material for the flight, whatever. I saw the Athlon already had. That was sweet. I tell you what, I was still steel fan as much as anybody, but Athlon's got great info, and they're quicker to the market.
Yeah.
They already have a full magazine now.
Yeah.
So I grabbed one of those suckers, be reading on the plane, and I'm already starting to get my info right going.
A little bit later, the week one line for the Nevada-Purdue game is out. And
I saw that as well.
We'll get into that a little bit later. So NBA wrapped up its dethroning of the Golden State Warriors last night, 114-110. I was on the wrong side of this game. I actually had Golden State minus two. I thought that if there was one game that you – and obviously it didn't hurt that Clay went out, you know that kind of hurt things a little bit late. But, you know, Toronto didn't back down at all last night. Josh, they came out and just buried three after three after three. It was absolutely amazing, you know, what they shot from the three-point field goals. You know, Lowry yesterday was 4 for 7. Pascal Siakam, 3 for 6. You know, Kawhi was 1 for 4. You know, Van Fleet, 5 for 11. So, I mean, they just shot lights out from the three-point line, and that was basically the difference. Well, Josh, I mean, what are your opinions here? You know, and I actually already have the odds on favorite for who's favored next year, but, you know, it's hard to, you know, I've been reading a bunch of stuff on Twitter and social media, you know, and I can remember, I can agree with a lot of things that are being said. It's, you know, the Golden State was making the claim that we're better without Durant, and then now that Durant was out and they want to give an asterisk to Toronto for winning the title, but you know, Golden State kind of they benefited from some injuries to Cleveland in one of their titles and stuff,
exactly.
Too, Josh.
So all that's a wash. Because you're right, the first one, where both Cleveland ended up with Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love out by the first game, and LeBron, you know, still made it a series. You know, last year, I mean, same thing, and they ended up sweeping Cleveland, but LeBron was all they had. And so, yeah, I want to hear. I mean, that's just part of the deal, and part of the reason you have such a stacked team is so you can survive if someone goes
injuries
down. Right. So don't get me wrong. Golden State had more than their share of misfortune, but a lot of things play into it, as you alluded to. One, I'll say this because let's face it. I mean, nobody ever gets to see the Raptors until the playoffs because they're not on TV. They're not a big market team. They're not in the TNT Thursday night game where you usually see the, you know, whatever, Warriors, Trailblazers, Lakers, whoever, the real high-profile teams. Unless you have, like, NBA League Pass or whatever, which I admittedly don't, you don't know who the Raptors are. You know, you figure they're the same team with the exception of you know, Kawhi Leonard being in there instead of DeMar DeRozan because of that trade. I just put it this way. One, I didn't know how good they were.
How good is Kawhi Leonard, by the way?
Well, and let's face it, most people count them out. They went down 2-0 to the Bucks, particularly after blowing game one that they should have won against Milwaukee. And you saw, oh, this team's kind of done. You're like, yeah, they're better, obviously, with Kawhi, but it looks like the Bucks and Giannis are ready to, you know, take that next step. So I sort of, admittedly, I think what the majority of the public thought, man, Toronto, great. They took a step forward, but they're nothing special. But to see them step up and play the way they did, I'm with you. I lost a big bet last night. I was pretty disappointed. I lost a big straight bet, and I had a parlay tied to the other half of the parlay having won. This laid the small spread there with Golden State, thinking, to me, that was just the pure probability of, are they really going to lose all three at home, right? And it's the final game ever in Oracle. I said, yeah, if there's ever one, they're just going to find a way, sweat and blood, to get that one victory and put the pressure back on. It was weird. It was similar to the hockey series. It seemed like the road team was winning every single game. And I figure, you know, if they do that, it would be interesting to see how Toronto responds, even at home in a Game 7, suddenly when you let a team back from 3-1, right? So you're right, but not only did they play incredibly hard and not mail it in, but early on last night, you know, Lowry was on fire, and then it was just pretty much, you know, anyone's game. But who, you know, who'd have thought? I mean, it was a funny way for it to end. Klay Thompson, people forget, I mean, the Warriors more or less just conceded. Remember when they just more or less mailed it in Game 3 because he got hurt. I mean, kept him out, and Durant's already out, and the Raptors, you know, took the lead. He comes back, and it's just crazy. I mean, people expected Thompson to be the one who stepped up the biggest in Durant's absence, and he did. But he goes in for that dunk, and it just looks like sort of a, you know, relatively, I mean, there was some contact there, and he goes down, and it looked like that big of a deal live. But the longer he stayed down and the more attention was given to him, like, you've got to be kidding him. I mean, that's a pretty bad luck all the way around. Like, Thompson's seriously down. I mean, he cannot get up on his own, you know, power, and then they're taking him to the tunnel. Like, I just couldn't believe. I mean, the series of events that happened for them was unfortunate, but having said that, like I said, no one apologizes for that. Golden State didn't when Cleveland lost their guys, and Toronto, I mean, who knows? I mean, they were playing so well anyway. It was a competitive series. You know?
John the Hawk Steven joined us.
Yo.
He was over there getting some $2.805s. John, what are your thoughts on the game and the series real quick?
I was sick. I don't know, just the way Clay, when he came down, it didn't look to me like that was, I mean, it was a little out of the ordinary, but it didn't look like, uh-oh.
It was either going to be, I mean, this is so stupid to say, is it really minor or is it going to be real bad?
That's exactly it, because we're watching it, and it's like, okay, we'll see. And then when he comes running back out there and shoots the free throws, you're like, okay, here we go. And it was just, it took me a second to realize he wasn't back out there after that. And it's, right. I don't know.
Especially when he came back, because you knew, like, oh, he's doing that to make sure he's not prevented from coming back to the game.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, maybe he's going to go back in the training room for a few minutes. But he'll be out there on the floor. Then suddenly, like you said, it took a while to realize he never came back. Like,
no, that's exactly it. And it's, you know, like you said, no one's going to apologize for the Raptors.
Nor should they.
They're a worthy champion. They played great. Van Vliet. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness.
This
guy was
this
5
Wichita
for 11.
Shocker.
Yeah, 5 for 11.
Yeah, it's just it was.
I expected more out of Stephen last night.
Yeah, I think he expected more out of himself. I think everybody
22,
did.
Yeah, he only ended up with 21 points.
When you're legitimately talked about the way that
3 for 11
is,
from as sniping.
It's just assumed that he's the greatest shooter of all time, and they're talking like he's in there with Magic and Michael and. And these guys, I don't know, man.
I mean, he's being given much credit for completely overhauling how the game is played, which is fair. Yeah, in a lot of ways, he was the pioneer of just the guy just flinging it from 40 feet, and it's become a legitimate threat in the game. And let's face it, I mean, as superstars go, I think because he's a likable guy, by and large, until now, he has escaped criticism. But it's just weird. Some guys, it's their personality, whatever it is, NFL, any sport you go into, some guys just seem like a magnet. Man, they so much as, you know, make one mistake and they're just ripped on. There's guys like Steph Curry who it seems like can escape just about anything. I'd say to this point in time, if superstars go, can a two-time MVP, but he's more or less just seemingly been blameless no matter what happened, something else was going on. And I think it is fair to say, especially in this condition, with Durant out for the majority of the playoff run, and he was the guy who, you know, by definition is supposed to step up, and he has had some falters in the biggest games.
I think I saw, and don't quote me on the exact number, but there was a stat out that I read that he's 2-for-22 in game tying or go ahead shots.
I think he missed his last 13 as well.
Yeah, inside 2 minutes. I mean, something crazy like that.
With shots to tie or take the lead in the last 20 seconds, he's 0-for-9.
Yeah, which is crazy. You know, and so with that being said,
is what's funny. It speaks to the point that the Max Kellerman statement last week that if he was going to have one guy on the Warriors, he wants to take the last shot, and he said Iguodala, and I thought it's laughable, but I mean,
you think about it.
Did he make a shot like that not too long?
No, I think 100% is Klay Thompson.
it's still Steph to me forever.
Yeah, it's Klay to me,
but Klay's right there.
It's Klay.
I'd take Klay as a player.
Yeah, 30. He only played 32 minutes yesterday. He went out
game
with 30.
Game six, Klay.
Exactly. And then you got Draymond Green, had another triple double, 11, 19 boards, 13 assists, 11 points.
Great player.
With all that being said, let's talk Durant. Obviously, we know that his Achilles rolled up into the back of his leg.
Yeah.
That kept Lindsey Drew out for a year. I mean, he might not play at all next year.
Lindsey also had the
– well, he had his hips afterwards, but yeah. But I've heard that about a year for that, because you have to actually unstretch that Achilles, attach it, and everything. So,
and Klay will be back at some point, but from everything I've read, you're not the same player until about 2 years after that. So, and by that point, you might be too old. So this is – these are two, I mean, for lack of a better term, warriors that put it on the line for the Warriors, and I respect the hell out of them. I think it's a great thing. It sucks that it had to come to this, but I like that narrative on Kevin Durant, which we've even said on this show. I think that's changed a little bit about we talked about it. I thought the whole time he'd be out there if he could, and I think he proved that.
Unfortunately, he paid the
ultimate price.
Question, and maybe I just haven't heard this. His injury that he suffered, the last one,
yes,
is it a result of his first injury, or was it, or are they totally not related?
When he was deemed healthy enough to go, when he was released, they said the worst that could happen is a bigger injury to the calf, and they did not mention. But are they not connected? How could it not be?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I don't know. I'm not a.
But if the tear was at the calf and not the heel, maybe I don't know. Like I said, I don't know.
But I made the observation last week. We even mentioned it when they showed KD walking around after the game, and that ice bag was really low.
Yeah.
On his leg, and I was like, that looks like an Achilles to me.
Yeah, I remember that.
Who knows?
So what are the guys? Where do the Warriors go from here? The future odds are out right now, which we'll get to.
This Laker nonsense.
Did you see that?
I did.
Golden State has the same odds to win the title next year as the Philadelphia 76ers. Yeah. They're at 12-1. So Durant, he's gone, is he not?
I don't think so.
You think he's going to stay?
I do. I think both of them are.
So
I think this changes everything. I think it really does.
So with that being said, when
his best move?
When's the earliest time frame that Durant can probably?
July 1st or June 30th? Now,
that's to designate. But how soon can he be on the court? How soon can he be on the court?
They said 9 to 12 months.
So,
I mean, he could be.
That would be basically
April.
Basically the NBA Finals next year, or the start of the season. Is that right?
Yeah. No, exactly. So that's in Warrior Land. That's the start of the season. Yeah.
Josh.
Actually, that's not until the finals.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this shakes out. Like I said, if if nothing else, the whole thing about dynasties and super teams, it's funny how it gives other teams hope for being competitive quicker than you might have thought. Because there was a time where Durant joins them, and pretty much everybody, you know, fans and otherwise, other NBA players, the reason why everyone hated that. Like, really? You have to create this much imbalance. Well, nonetheless, the Warriors, it was 5 straight finals, 3 championships. It's not bad, right?
Pretty good.
Durant signed up for him, you think, were the Warriors just going to win, like, the next 5 or 6? That was the idea.
When they signed DeMarcus Cousins this year.
Oh, he's over.
Come on, this team's going to win 75
right,
games.
On top of that, right. And it's kind of funny because you mentioned John. I mean, I think the thing with Durant, Ken, I mean, I respect him for going out there and giving it a go. But I put it this way, for as much as they're paid and everything else, I think he should. I mean, he owed it to them to try to get back there. They're obviously
could
have benefited from his return. I'm not saying he wasn't hurt or whatever, but the fact that he was mobile enough, and again, not second guessing.
He looked dynamite.
He could have just probably done his thing, browsed around the perimeter, taking jumpers and not risk. But you can't go out there and say you're never going to face contact because you're going to.
Well,
so it was just an unfortunate thing. But I feel like, you know, so he went out there. Did he earn respect from people who were doubting? You know,
yeah.
Maybe so, but it still doesn't change. Like, you know, if you go way back, I'm still not a huge fan of him joining the Warriors. And I think the same thing needs to be mentioned about Kawhi Leonard, where it's like, wow, you saw what a great player he was. Well, people just sort of forgot. I mean, he took a year off. I mean, he was hurt too, but he was the Finals MVP 5 years ago. That's why San Antonio was so bitter. It's not like people forgot what a great player he was. I mean, he was their Finals MVP with, you know, the Tim Duncan and the Ginobili era. People knew he was great, and it's fine. You know, he was the difference maker for Toronto, and that's awesome. But to me, it still doesn't change what he did to the Spurs, which was, I just feel, if, at the very least, it was unprofessional. Like, if we took time off from our jobs, and I know it's not same comparison because sports is a whole different world. But if you were seriously sick and took a medical leave of absence and your employer just called in and said, hey, wonder, you know, we know you've taken this leave of absence, we thought you were coming back this date, you know, what's going on? And you just never took their call and didn't do anything. And then one day, you know, by not showing up, they figured you had left the job.
Yeah.
And that would be wrong. And that's what Kawhi did to the Spurs. So everyone say, hey, look, the Spurs are screwed up and letting him go. They had no choice. He wasn't going to play for them anymore. They got what they could. They got a good player, of course, not the same, in DeMar DeRozan. But and so he goes to Toronto and does that. It's like, you're good for him and everything, but look at how much they coddled him. They let him take half the games off.
Yeah.
They're like, Kawhi, play when you want. We want to just placate you so bad.
It's a different time.
And then
so
he goes out there and does his thing, and hey, good for him. He's a great player. But now, what do you think? If you're a Toronto fan, do you think even if he bails out the door tomorrow, are you still just cool with him forever because he did
that? Yeah, oh, yeah. He's earned.
Because he's gonna leave.
You think so?
I think there's a better than 75% chance he leaves.
Yeah.
But
Where does he go?
I think he goes to the Clippers.
Yeah, okay.
That's the big
momentum. Let's hold off here because we're up against commercial break. Because
I think he should go to Philly, though.
We have the future odds of who's going to win it next year, which we haven't said who it is. Who's the odds on to win it next year? We already said the 76ers and Golden State are both at 12-1. These are current odds. But
they're going to meet in the finals, so that makes sense.
There's some other ones I want to give to you guys. Two of them that really don't make any sense to me. So hold that thought. We'll come back after this break on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to William Hill Sports Show. I'm your host, Kenny B, here with Josh Nagel and John the Hawk Stevens, talking a little bit of NBA basketball, you know, recapping the season and, you know, where the Golden State's going to go from here with John thinks that Durant's going to re-sign, and if Durant and Clay come back, you know, they're 12-1. I just don't know. That just all depends on if Kevin Durant, you know, what happens with him.
Well, I mean, his options are severely limited from what they were. Obviously, he's still going to get a lot of play out there, you know, with the Knicks or Nets or whomever. But I think the smartest move would be – I read today that his last resort is to opt into the contract and just keep it as it is in case he doesn't get everything else. But for him to opt out and re-sign with the Warriors, because the Warriors are not going to let him get away and not pay him for what the sacrifice that he made. And same with Clay. So, I don't know. After the injury, I thought there was a really good chance he was leaving. After the injury, I think that changed. But then again, who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. And, you know, it tends to be one of those things. The injury affecting your market value, it just comes right down to it. That depends on who you are, right? Because same thing with the Knicks. Like, if they didn't get the top pick, Zion Williamson, but they're going to get some good draft picks or whatever, they're probably more than willing. Like, hey, we'll wait. We're rebuilding it, right?
Yeah.
They weren't going to win it probably
next
year anyway. They'll probably still throw, you know, King's Ransom at him and say, hey, you can sit here and you know, rehab for a year. Does it – delay, you know, or reduce the total number of suitors, maybe, because there might be some who just want to compete right away and you don't know what's going to happen for a full year.
Yeah.
But the Klay Thompson thing, I feel the same way. Like, hey, he's the homegrown guy who helped, you know, build this dynasty. I just think he opened your checkbook, and if he, you know, he ends up sitting the majority of the year also, so be it. But the biggest thing with the Warriors, they need to address now. Obviously, you know, they drafted Curry and Thompson. They need to start doing that again, because let's say their core, I think the main thing is there's still obviously nothing wrong with a great backcourt and whatnot. Their depth was so limited, though. You can't take for granted for a while. Their bench was so strong in those championship years. Hey, guys coming off and really contributing. And now just got to where, put it this way, it was pretty thin. And we saw, you know, Kevon Looney, okay, he's, you know, pretty decent prospect or whatnot.
He was out for a year twice and came back.
Right. But in terms of going right, people didn't realize that. Everyone focused so much on Durant. Like, yeah, this guy breaks two collarbones, and he gets back in there. Yeah. I mean, that takes some courage, too, because there's a cracked ribs and a broken collarbone or all the above, and he's in there. You saw, by the way, his first game back, a few open layups he had where he wouldn't dunk it. Yeah, it hurt. You could tell he was hurt. Yeah. He was laying it in because the full extension was causing him pain. But, I just feel like they need to read, because Sean Livingston, they're saying, is likely going to retire. Jordan Bell, you know, the kid from Oregon, he's got some spot minutes. They just need to start developing depth again.
Iguodala's not a
sure spring thing. Chicken.
Yeah, so it's...
Well, Milwaukee's odds on favorite right now. I mean, I think I can see that.
I can too.
And Mark Shannon and I were actually just tweeting back and forth, texting back and forth. You know, shout out to Mark Shannon. He brought up a couple of good points. Usually when you're injured, you know, and you play injured, you're more susceptible to hurting another part of your body.
Yeah, that's right.
So going back to the Durant thing. But the Clippers are at 7-1. Second odds on favorite to win the NBA title.
Yeah.
And he kind of brought up the point where I was going to go with this. You know, with Milwaukee being 6-1, the Clippers are 7-1, number two. So doesn't that kind of, like Mark said, doesn't that kind of tell you that the books are anticipating Kawhi going to the Clippers?
Yeah, for sure, Ken.
I would think so.
Yeah, and it's the same thing with the Lakers having some short odds. It's just like,
I was going to get to that next.
We're not going to sit there and give you, 25-1 of the Lakers where, you know, they're just bracing for it. Like, yeah, if not, Anthony Davis seems the most logical. If not, probably still. They're bound to get some other, you know, high-powered guys over there. They're just not, you know, it used to be a thing where, like, oh, the blockbuster personnel move happened, then they – You jumped in there to change the odds. Now the odds makers are just a step ahead. They're like, yeah, we're just going to – and if they get nobody, sure, then we'll post them back at 25-1. But there's like, yeah, we're not just going to allow these super teams to be built and pretend we're caught off guard by it. You know, it makes sense. But from everything I've heard, they're back in the same basically negotiating stance they were, where Anthony Davis, I think, is likely to go down. I think it's stupid, honestly, for him. It's like, why not do your own thing? You're about to draft Zion Williamson with a healthy team. I say stay there and do your thing.
But
it's not going to work out that way.
And Bucks have some question marks, too. I believe Middleton and Brogdon are both free agents. So I assume they'd come back. I don't know where they stand, but that's not a guarantee as well. So
Tommy Thompson just texted me, Johnny. He said that Golden State said they're going to offer KD and Klay max contracts.
Yeah, as well.
But
they
with that
should.
Being said, yeah, so we're going down this Milwaukee 6-1, Clippers 7-1, Houston 8-1. I can see that. Toronto 8-1. I think that. I mean, obviously, if Kawhi leaves, that's going to shoot through the roof. But John, you brought it up too, or maybe it was you, Josh. The Lakers at 10-1.
Yeah.
Man, I know they went out and got AD, and they're probably maybe. But now you got LeBron, you got AD.
Well, they haven't gotten AD yet.
Well, doesn't it tell you that he's going there?
Yeah, I mean, but that also not they're going to be attractive to any free agent. I mean, it is the Lakers. Kids grew up dreaming of playing for the Lakers, and you have LeBron James in place. So, yeah, most of that is AD, but there's also other variables as well.
I hate the Lakers.
Oh,
I used
God,
to really love
know.
The Lakers.
Not me.
But with the Magic thing leaving such a bad taste in my mouth, I'm over it. I mean, I don't know why it's so bad with me, but I hold grudges, John. You know that.
But I think Magic did the right thing. He was the one who was getting the wool pulled over his eyes. But anyway, I rooted for the Lakers back in the day just because I hate the Celtics so much. So once the Sixers would be eliminated, I'd either be rooting for the Pistons or the Lakers, whoever's playing
the
Celtics. So I grew to love Magic.
So with that being said, you know, and then you have Indy at 10-1 and the Sixers at 12-1. So, you know, right now, Josh, John, I mean, if you had to take a $100 bill and stick it somewhere, you know, on these future odds,
really?
or is there a longer shot that you think that might? I mean, look at what's happening.
Nuggets,
Denver. You know what? I didn't. I just went down to like the top five or six.
The Nuggets and the Blazers, those type of teams. The Mavericks.
You know what's funny? I heard. You know, some of the analysts and whatnot saying, yeah, teams that should just go all in and maybe try to get the big, you know, free agent, remember the big trade, and say, yeah, look at the Nuggets. They should go in for Anthony Davis. I mean, exactly how? What are they going to do, give up Jokic?
Yeah,
I mean, who do they have? What they have is a good young core. There's no way that Denver could do anything without giving up the guys that fit their system
that's
the best.
Right.
I think
that's
they're
right.
the worst candidate to do that. I mean, I just think they need to build with who they have. Maybe have a good draft. Maybe if they've – I don't know what their money situation is, but if they've got good money, you know, maybe try to draw a free agent. But they're not the type to pull off a huge trade.
If you could add a Kawhi to that, then you're
talking. Kawhi-like player, totally.
Yes.
You're right, that's what they need, because obviously there's still Jamal Murray's like 22 or whatever.
Yeah.
He's just coming into his own, and same thing, Jokic is only whatever, he's young. So they, but they have that young core, and all the, yeah, it looked like yeah, they could probably use that kind of stabilizing.
What were the Celtics?
Speaking of, I'll look at that. But going back to the Raptors real quick, did you guys see the episode of Running with the Pack when Trayshawn Thurman said,
"Oh, it's hilarious."
Have you seen this?
I have.
They're at the Italian restaurant in Vegas before the UNLV game, and they're talking about who's going to win it. And Trayshawn Thurman said the Raptors. Jordan Caroline lost his mind.
Raptors.
And then Zeus got involved.
Yeah.
But it's all over Twitter right now, and everybody's
who's laughing now.
Yeah, exactly. Trayshawn, that boy.
Exactly.
TT. So with that being said, you know, here they are, the Raptors taking them home. So
can you mention these odds? It's kind of funny because right, we have no idea how the rosters are going to shake out or whatnot. It seems like all speculation. But the whole idea, we do it with the NFL too, right? Early in training camps, like, oh, who might be even viable at 60-1? Somebody always comes out of the woodwork and makes a playoff, so you don't expect. But some of the future odds, if you follow the William Hill social media feeds, they send this out. But it's crazy how many of these are actually hitting, because they said when the odds were released, the Raptors were 60-1. So even they had a good team before the Kawhi trade, but just put it, they were top seed in the Eastern Conference the previous year. So no one knew they were going to do that, but still, a team that's always, you know, viable in the playoffs. The odds started changing this after July, whatever. But still, they were 60-1 for a couple weeks. But the hockey's the bigger one. You mentioned someone hitting it big on that. But you realize at the start of the year, the St. Louis Blues were in last place 1st of January this year. It looked like they were doing hockey's version of tanking. They were playing lesser-known guys, and they called up the goalie who ended up being the MVP.
Yeah.
He was the fourth-ranked goalie in their organization, meaning he was the backup on the AAA team. They were basically rebuilding.
So it's unbelievable.
Like, okay, so you're essentially doing the hockey tanking. They were 300-1, and they just won the cup. So all the time we talk about this, it just seems like
last place on January
3rd. Go ahead and throw your money away on the 100-1 shot. They're coming in consistently.
Absolutely. You know, John, going back to what you said, the Nuggets are 18-1. Celtics are 12-1.
Okay. And, I mean, I think the Celtics are viable for AD as well.
So let's look at – let's look here. We're going to laugh at these. So let's look at the future book. The Cavaliers, 200-1. No chance.
Wow.
I mean, just – and the Suns, 100-1. There's just nothing down at the bottom of this that makes me want to bet
tell you
any
what,
of these
the
favorites.
Suns have some building blocks. They're not going to do it this year, but – a couple more drafts, a couple more tweaks here and there. That's going to be a good team. They have a lot of building blocks.
You would think. I always said the same as all those years with the 76ers in the process. Like, how many number one picks can you get and still be, you know, DeAndre Ayton after a while? You keep drafting in the top three. You should have a decent core of guys.
It's really annoying, the Markelle Fultz draft, not just because they took him, but remember how deep that draft was supposed to be?
Yes, they whiffed. They could have had Jason Tatum.
Yeah. But even so, he's not
up
a
for
next
Fultz.
Level superstar or anything. He's a really good player.
Yeah.
But that was supposed to be one of the deepest drafts in memory, and it just isn't.
Yeah, it's true. But still,
so
of the top
know.
Five guys, it still looks bad that they traded up to take Fultz,
who's
already
up.
Gone.
Yeah, he's –
all right. Basketball, it's a wrap.
It's a wrap. Raptors,
so, So what do we let's talk a little bit about soccer, the Women's World Cup. What are your guys' thoughts on the U.S. and the Thailand score 13-0? Real quick, I mean, I just
put it this way. For soccer, it's excessive because, let's face it, unlike basketball or whatever else, you can kind of control when you score or whatever. I mean, if it's that lopsided of a thing, 13-0 in soccer. I mean, that would be like if you saw a college football game that was 110-0. I mean, take each one of those goals and times it by seven. That's what a touchdown would be. I mean, I'm serious. I just think it smacks of overkill.
So, how
what Steve Spurrier say? You don't like it?
Stop it. So, with that being said, what do you think the mind frame is of the women's soccer team right now? I mean, they're taking a buttload of heat in the media. Do you think it rolls? They play Sunday, and there's a reason, because I want to get to the line on Sunday and who they play. They play Chile on Sunday.
Uh-huh.
With that being said, so what do you think their mentality is? Do you think it's going to go out there and know we're going to go out there and we're going to bury Chile just the same way? Do you think we're going to take it easy? What do you think?
They're not going to take it easy. Well, I mean, the further you progress, obviously, the more difficult the opponent.
This is still the pool play, though.
I understand that, but it's still. Why would they take it easy? What do? Why? I know we're the typical ugly Americans, whatever, because we win 13-0. You don't think Thailand would have done the same to us? A million times out of a million, Thailand would try to bury the USA. Guess what?
All right. Well, here we go.
We're the US of A.
So here,
it's America.
Here's my thoughts. I'm going to throw this out to you. USA plays Chile on Sunday at 9 a.m. USA is laying 4.5 goals.
Yeah.
The total's 5.
Well, that's Alex Morgan just by yourself.
Josh, the total's 5.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Like it's a side to total parlay. It's like one of those. Yeah, you know, we see the college football spread sometimes where, you know, Alabama's like -28.5 against somebody with a total of 34.5.
Yeah.
Where, like, you just see it's like, yeah, it's one sort of precedes the other for sure.
But, Josh, you are – it's a good point. It's a good analogy. It's not like basketball where you – soccer, you can – you don't have to go and go to the net every time. I understand that, but –
different styles.
And
right?
You know what? I don't see this as much. The score doesn't, you know, necessarily bother me. But I wasn't a huge fan of the celebration where it's like, oh, it's a huge. Obviously, it's so lopsided. If you're up double figures in a soccer match, it's clear it's a mismatch. When you're scoring the 11th goal and doing cartwheels through the field, it's like, okay, Come on now.
So
I think they could have calmed that
down. So Thailand now plays Sweden, who Sweden beat Chile 2-0. Sweden's laying 6 goals and the total 6.5. That's where I'm going with this, Josh.
I took some today. I had to research the World Cup for Sportsline. As I say, unfortunately, soccer's not my thing. Digging it, there's not a lot of information out there. But I had to handicap various games, and I did today. Actually, did all right because I had Argentina against England. Argentina was getting +3.5 goals at like -105. I dug in there and saw that they got an up and coming team, only their third time ever making the. Yeah, World Cup, and they held Japan to 0-0 tie. Like, just defensively, it's the type they're not going to want to get embarrassed, so they're real conservative. They're going to take all those goals, 1-0. It was sweet.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think? USA-Chile, 9 a.m. Sunday. USA laying 4.5 goals with a total of 5.
Can I just lay that with Alex Morgan?
I'm just going to play USA and over. I'm just going to play USA and over.
Yeah.
Why not a four-teamer? USA and over to Sweden and over. Sweden laying 6. Sweden won 2-0. They beat Chile 2-0. And now they're playing Thailand, who just got boat raced 13-0.
I don't like Sweden.
The women are pretty.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Josh is just.
Good point. I forgot what I was saying.
Yeah, so with that being said, we have about 30 seconds, Josh. So, and when we come back, we're going to talk Wolfpack football because the first week lines are out.
I was going to say it's low scoring there. I would still be tempted if you could take multiple goals in a soccer match to do so most of the time.
Take multiple goals?
Yeah, if you get +3.5, whatever it is.
Me too. I'm going to take USA and over to Sweden and over and just say the first game. The Sweden-Thailand game is at 6 a.m. and the USA-Chile game.
Are you going to get up to watch?
No.
You have to watch it?
I'm not. So that's Sunday. So women back in action on Sunday. So when we come back, we're actually going to talk a little bit about Wolfpack football. So we'll be back after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the Windmill Sports Show. Coming to you live just outside the Windmill Sportsbook. The Club Calneva. John, as I said here, and Josh, I have the week one college football lines. Nick got it.
Really?
He got the week one college football lines.
I like college football, Josh. You like college football?
Right here.
Right here. Josh's already got it.
Looking at.
With that being said,
Josh is no fun.
What's up, buddy? So Saturday, August 24th, is the season opener, Miami, Florida versus Florida. Florida laying 7.5, and then Hawaii versus Arizona. Arizona laying 11.5. With that being said, John, if we go back down, Nevada opens up on a Friday this year on the August 30th. And
Purdue.
Nevada at home, season opener versus Purdue. Nevada, +9.
I was just going to say 11.
Were you?
Yeah, that's about right, 9, 10, 11. I'd say so. We still don't know. What? Focus on something else. I lost my train of thought. That's about right, don't you think? I mean, we still don't know who the quarterback is. Yeah. That's kind of an issue.
Yeah, I think that's the uncertainty. You know, we do have a bunch of guys competing for that, you know, for the starting quarterback position. I'm going to need to do a little bit more research on what Purdue has and Purdue coming back. You know, Nevada plays good. They seem to play well at the beginning of the year. You know, and with that being said, you know, they went down to Northwestern. They probably should have beat Northwestern. And I think it's a big test for Nevada. You know, we're getting into Norvell's players, bigger, stronger. You know, they're learning the system a little bit more.
Yeah.
You know, I like the direction the program is going. Nevada grit, exactly. So, Josh, have you handicapped this game or done anything yet?
Yeah, a little bit. I put it this way. Obviously, at this point, I actually know more about Purdue than –
Nevada,
yeah, because you're right. You're waiting for personnel to shake out. I said Purdue's got a good experienced quarterback coming back. The receiver is a freshman last year.
Curtis Painter still?
I believe, yeah, exactly. I think it's Drew Brees, actually.
Bob Brees.
Yeah. But, know, you know, Purdue, again, I have the kids, their freshman receiver last year, I believe he led, I mean, if he didn't lead the country in receiving, he was close, but return touchdowns, too, just super explosive.
Oh,
he was
boy.
Just a freshman last year. He's back. Yeah, the bottom line is they're pretty full of playmakers, and you would just think, you know, a Big Ten team with good returning talent, bowl eligible last year. Kid, I would say I'd expect the spread to go pretty much up. I mean, I think nine.
Yeah,
and it's one of those deals where, again, I want to see see a little bit more about Nevada. But I think I expect that week one Purdue would be ahead of Nevada.
I 100% agree with you in that aspect, Josh. If you like Nevada in this game, don't bet it now. But if you like Purdue, now's the time to grab the nine.
Yeah, I'd say so. It's going to creep up to two touchdowns, I believe, at least close to it.
Wow.
You think
that high?
I think it gets in the 12 and a half, 13 range. I think that, yeah.
Wow, then we need to weigh in right now and, you know, just sit on the ticket for a while.
Think about it.
Well, I think that it at least gets to 10 and a half.
It's a mid-range sure. Big Ten team, but we're a mid-range Mountain West team. So, I mean, let's do the math.
So,
I always come off as the biggest Pack hater of all time, and I love them more than life itself.
So we do have all these other games, Josh and John. You know, like I said, you know, they open up Saturday, August 24th is the college openers, the two games on that day, and then that following Friday, the Pack plays at home versus Purdue, with Purdue laying 9.5. Josh, I know that you probably kind of glanced over this. Anything that you see in this slate of games that Nick has already put out? Florida State plays Boise on August 31st.
Wow.
Florida State's only laying 3.5 in that game.
Oh, please, just destroy them.
Destroy Boise?
Destroy Boise. I love the Noles.
And we have Southern Cal plays Fresno State. Southern Cal laying 12.5 in that game. Weigh in, Josh and John.
Yeah, there's a couple.
Where's that game?
It's at USC. That's where it's listed to be at.
I still like Fresno.
Why not? I mean,
Fresno's good, man.
And Cal's been underperforming, it seems, for the last couple of years.
I still think we missed the boat. I don't know if there was ever any discussion. But when Jeff Tedford had residence in Reno and we're looking for a coach, it seemed like a pretty good idea. But I don't know.
Josh? Ken, the very first week after that Saturday kickoff with just a couple games, the Thursday night kickoff where there's a handful of them right there, there's Clemson minus 34 against Georgia Tech. I mean, that's crazy. That's an ACC game. You realize Georgia Tech's rebuilding. You know, the triple option coach, he left. And they brought,
in
the guy from Temple. Right, so that won't be their thing. But they used to historically give Clemson a real hard time because of that triple option.
I used to intentionally look for big lines on Georgia Tech just because it's so weird.
This will be the first rate. A lot of teams, a once-a-year deal, they had trouble stopping. You know, Georgia Tech could be, whatever, 6-6, 7-5, but they would blow out a team they were supposed to lose.
Why did Calvin Johnson go to Georgia Tech?
Yeah, why did all the receivers, why did they ever have top flight? But they had a bunch of them. Because Demaryius Thomas also.
Roman Reigns went there.
Yeah, but so, again, you know, Georgia Tech has the whole rebuilding era or whatever. Clemson's coming off the national championship. But to me,
Trevor Lawrence is the second.
I'm going to take the five touchdowns.
And he's the second odds on favorite.
To Tua,
for the Heisman, too.
He's clearly better than Tua. We already saw that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
He's the most 3-1
NFL-ready sophomore, they think, in the history for quarterbacks ever. He's a beast. I mean, so with that being said,
but Ken, if you wanted a third straight Oklahoma quarterback to win it, then you're Jalen Hurts at 9-1.
He's the number three
third
favorite
guy.
I remember when they replaced Kelly Bryant when they announced that Trevor Lawrence was. I thought it was crazy, but that shows you what I know.
Yeah,
Trevor Lawrence is amazing.
Oh, but then Lawrence gets hurt in the first half of the following game.
Exactly.
Yeah, he gets hurt against Syracuse, and you wonder if he broke his – I mean, he got smacked. He didn't return. The third-string guy led them on a last-minute comeback to win that game. And Lawrence took a beating, and he thought, oh, man, now you let your most experienced quarterback walk. Right. Now, you know, the young freshman's hurt, and does Clemson just blow their season. Then he comes back.
Why does Syracuse do that every year? Syracuse and Pitt every year do something stupid like that.
Syracuse beat them the year before. They only lost.
Exactly.
Crazy stuff. College football is about, you know, 6 weeks away, 7 weeks away. You know, who's going to win the national title this year, Josh? Is Clemson the favorite, you think?
Well, I just put it this way. Ever since the
– And how much of a hangover is there?
Yeah, ever since the development of the 4-team playoff, it's kind of funny because you have your Washington, you have teams that duck, you have Michigan State duck in there and make that cameo appearance. But it's been Clemson and Alabama every single year. So until otherwise, it seems like their invitation is set.
Yeah.
And there's just nothing you can do. They're head and shoulders above everybody else.
I'm fine with it. I love it.
Yeah, and they just make it. Of course, you got your Ohio States, made it a couple times. But Again, they got a new coach. Yeah, Oklahoma's made it a couple times.
Oklahoma's loaded again this year.
Yeah, I just can't see. Yes, it's just a short list, Ken, because you'd like to consider other contenders, but it's just been proven. This era of college football, those two are head and shoulders. Now, look at some future odds and everything else, but in terms of just sort of cementing their spot at the Final Four, it seems pretty safe.
So you have Jalen Hurts replacing Kyler Murray, who replaced
Baker Mayfield. All transfers.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
Who replaced Trevor Knight, right? That's a Baker Mayfield.
Trevor Knight.
Crazy stuff. College football right around the corner. Not only does Nick have the college football week one lines out, too, he also has the pro football week one lines out,
too. How was Jalen able to be eligible this year?
Graduate transfer.
Oh, he's a graduate transfer? Yeah. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. What is with my voice?
I don't know.
By the way, it's worth noting, you know, in terms of, especially with him getting benched for Tua, and it's disappointing, end to his Alabama career. I still love what he did in the SEC title game.
I do,
game.
Too. That was great.
That's one of the better stories I've ever seen. And that, to me, is about perseverance and hanging in there.
I love that.
The biggest thing, with their season on the line, and suddenly he didn't pout, whatever, he gets to go in there and play, basically one half for all the marbles, and he leads Alabama to the SEC championship. Yeah. That was just fantastic.
That was really cool. Yeah. That was good.
Oklahoma's loaded again. Emphasis on defense. That's what they obviously have been their Achilles heel, but that's where their focus is right now. I'm excited to see.
You know my disdain for Oklahoma, but that Lincoln Riley, I love that guy. It's a lot different than it was in the Stoops era, even the Switzer era.
How long does he stay, John?
Where else would he go?
Until
Jerry Jones says Lincoln come south.
Well, I'm just curious.
That's exactly what it is,
Josh.
Because what they keep talking about, right? Going with this youth movement, the Sean McVay, and everyone's wondering who the next McVay is. Lincoln Riley's on everyone's mind, so I'm just curious how big of a checkbook is it going to take to lure him in there? But you never know. I mean, he's still barely a college head coach. I mean, I just mean, is he ready to go? Coach the Jaguars next year? I don't know. Maybe he is.
You're referring to Lincoln Riley?
Yeah. I mean, do you think he's ready to make that jump into the NFL? I want to say how Cliff Kingsbury does. He couldn't break 500 at Texas Tech. I mean, good luck. I mean,
with the Cardinals.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It is.
It's very interesting.
I mean,
he got his man. He said, "Hey, if Kyler Murray's, I'll take him number one guaranteed." And then, who would have ever?
I'm really excited to see them play.
Oh, me too.
I follow the Cardinals a little bit, just as a West Coast. I don't like any other team on the West Coast, but them.
Man, I want to see him, and I just want to see him put the ball on Larry Fitzgerald and just see what can happen.
Isn't it? It's a shame that Fitz, besides that little run with Kurt Warner, has never played to the great quarterback.
Yeah. Is there a bigger class act in the NFL?
Nope.
In maybe all of sports, maybe that Larry Fitzgerald
that dude
might
be top notch.
I absolutely love that guy. You can't say anything negative about him.
Great. Here's it. Like I said, he's becoming like a living. Say he's an iconic figure who is such as he's still playing. He's amazing. Like I said, he had his highlights, a couple Super Bowl appearances or whatnot, but he's also just gone through. Now, a series of subpar quarterbacks and Josh Rosen, who actually I think would be pretty good.
No matter who was playing,
he was never a prima donna. Yeah. He never saw himself as above the fray. And it's not jumping to try to win one last time with a contender. He stayed there the whole time.
I remember when he made that catch to go ahead in Super Bowl 43, I remember kind of resigning myself as a Steelers fan going, you know what, Fitz, that guy deserves that. So I'm all right with that. I wasn't all right with it, but you're negotiating, going
with your feelings.
Yes,
actually negotiating with your feelings.
If it had to be somebody, I'm glad it would be Larry Fitzgerald. He is top notch. He's a class act dude. If you don't know, look him up.
August 24th, kickoff of college football.
My dad's birthday.
Thursday, September 25th, kickoff of pro football. Tomorrow? One of the most underrated events, College World Series. I mean, are you ready for the College World Series?
I don't know. Ben White, is UCLA still going to win this thing somehow?
Michigan's in there 12-1. They're the longest shot. So Vandy's plus 260. Josh, do you like the College World Series?
I usually end up watching the handful of the final games. Yeah.
I absolutely love the College
World Series.
I'll
tell you what, as much as I enjoy
it. Every total, John, every total for Nick has the lines up for all the games tomorrow.
Yeah.
Every total is 10 or higher in the first round.
And
Vanderbilt's these teams, some of these aces that they're trotting out there.
Yeah.
Number one in
Kumar Rocker.
Yeah.
He's
a freshman.
Yeah, that dude is
he's the two. I don't even think he's the one.
He might not even be.
But with that being said, you have these college baseball games where the totals, everyone is 10 or 11.
As much as I enjoyed the Women's College World Series, they got a lot to live up to for me. I loved every second of that. So, but no, it's a great event. It's we always say it.
You lost your mind when the girl from Oklahoma hit the home run.
Oh, I loved it.
And then obviously Oklahoma gives it up in the bottom half for the UCLA victory.
Yeah, but it was just you're down to your final strike, and it was a veteran gangster move right there, hitting a home run. But it's that type of stuff. I love watching those girls play, but College World Series, there's nothing like it. We've never gone for some reason.
You know, and what we always say is the dogs are live in these games.
They are.
You can get these plus $3 dogs.
We said it last week with Michigan.
Well, not only that.
And Duke.
Vanderbilt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Vanderbilt loses the first game. Michigan loses the first game. They were the two big. They were both like minus 380.
You can't do that at this level of baseball.
Yeah.
Baseball in general is a weird sport. College baseball in a regional?
Yep.
Oh, you kidding me? Give me the dog every time.
Especially when you're getting 3-1. Mm-hmm. I absolutely agree with that. That's what's exciting, Josh.
Yeah, like you mentioned, Ken, that's the angle we talked about last year, but especially some of these totals get inflated because you understand, you know, they use aluminum bats and the ball flies out. And sometimes in college baseball, you'll see some pretty high scoring games. But when you do have guys on both sides, your potential, your first round draft picks and high level guys, you know, performing in this do or die format, you see some real baseball scores. I mean, 3-2 and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes I see the double figure total between two solid teams and their ace or their second guy is going. You could make a lot on the unders.
Yeah.
All right, let's head off to our last commercial break. When we come back, we'll talk golf and baseball. John, I want to ask your opinion. So think about this. Who you think is going to win the National League Cy Young? About that. Okay.
Gotcha.
We'll back after these messages on ESPN 94.5 FM. Welcome back to the William Hill Sports Show. I'm your host, Kenny B. Josh Nagel, John Stevens. You guys talk for a second. I'm actually going to text Dave Grohlman, the vice president of William Hill.
I thought you were going to say Dave Grohl.
Dave Grohlman, the vice president of William Hill. And they have virtual horse racing here. And I'm going to tell them that I want to name some horses.
Yes.
Josh?
I have some horses I need to name.
Say, it's one of those, you know, hobbies that we have here, the virtual horses at the Club County. It's just interesting. It is as it sounds. It's like if you play video Keno, and it's basically horse racing in, you know, animation form, where it's like they don't really exist, but there's some funny names, and you watch them run around the track with their cartoon characters.
I have a 5-horse. Who do you have here?
And you can bet and wager real money on it. But it's funny because, we make side bets on it, but the names of the horses are often very entertaining, so we're just curious how they come up with them and how we might get in on helping name some horses.
Well, one of the jockeys' name is Nick Boggs.
That's
Nick Bogdanovich,
right,
who is the
– You see all their names. Like I said, you see Grohl, you see all their names.
Elko, Reno, Sparks, Glenbrook, you know how they name those ones.
So,
right, here we go, post time right now.
Here we go. It's Brandy Ryan Raceway. How long is this race? They need to get a racing form for this.
Yeah, that's exactly what we need.
Of course, right. Brandywine Raceway being
– Hand they're off.
Used to be Brandywine Bookmaking, which became part of William Hill. So,
all right, let's look at a little bit at the U.S. Open. Looks like the projected cut is going to be, as I scroll through here, the projected cut is going to be at +2. Last person in, Tommy Fleetwood. Wow, he rolled in right there at number 2. So where are we at with the leaderboard right here? Looks like Justin Rose. Justin Rose is tied at top with Gary Woodland, both at -7. See, Woodland actually maybe he could take the lead going in. He's only through 14 right now at -7. So with Justin Rose, Rory -5, Aaron Wise -5. I mean, if you look at the top of this board, Koepka -4. Tiger Woods, he shot one over today. I think he shot 72. Yeah, he did shoot 72. So he's at even right now, par for the course being 71, Josh and John.
Yeah.
So that puts him, what, 6 strokes off the lead?
He
ain't dead.
Excuse me. I just lost it. Where did he go? I think he might be +1, isn't he? -1. You know, he should be even. Okay. Is that right?
Yeah.
Tiger Woods is even. That's right, even. Yeah. He shot 72 today, so he's at even, and the leader right now, Justin Rose and Gary Woodland at -7. So, you know, it looks like it's going to be a horse race coming down. I did really good on my matchups yesterday. Went 5-1, and did not make a bet today. You know, after I talked to Nick a little bit about
Shoffley's the only bet I made
today. He's at -4, John.
He's right there.
He's right there. Did you bet X today or in a matchup?
No, I bet a future.
Where'd you get him at?
I forget. It was 18, maybe 18, 18, I believe.
18, that's nice. Scott Piercy, he got a call for a long time. He's the one that won the Barracuda out here, if you remember.
Yeah.
So, Josh, you've been following the golf?
No.
Nope.
Not since Tiger won the match. Well, actually.
Yeah. You've
retired. I don't blame you.
Exactly. I'm done.
I don't blame you.
You have no Tiger in this hunt anymore.
Exactly.
If you never bet golf again, that might be the one sport that you can say you're ahead of.
Thanks, man. I think that's a compliment.
But it's not for betting. It's not for betting at the window. It's side wagering,
right?
Which is more fun.
But no, it's kind of funny. It's one of those things.
Futures are not up
yet.
US
Open seems not
main matchups.
You know, be a friend of mine. It will be, of course, this weekend. You see the final rounds on TV and whatever. I'd be curious because I love watching it. Pebble Beach. It's challenging, and you know, the majors are always awesome, but it's just weird. Doesn't it seem like the Masters gets all the attention in terms of the majors? But this one's totally gone under the radar until now.
Yeah.
So I look at the matchups, everything like that. What I like to do is once two rounds are in the books, I like to see who still appears viable with some decent odds. So in the past, it's crazy because you can get some pretty good odds. It's like the end game, you know, with baseball or whatever. Your team's down two runs, it's plus 350 or whatever. Their guys are still viable to win the tournament, maybe just a couple strokes behind, and you'll get that 12-1 or better. So that's what I look tonight, Ken, is look at the standings and then check out, fire up the William Hill app and see.
Fired up.
And maybe take a future or two and a couple guys to still win the tournament.
Wow, I did. Oh, here it is. Yep, there it is. So golf, no matchups are up right now, so we can just basically give you the leaders. It looks like plus two is going to be the projected cut. Justin Rose, Gary Woodland right now are at minus seven. Woodland's still on the course through 14. He's at minus seven. So with that being said, anything else you want to add to this? Phil Mickelson's minus three.
Well, as long as Koepka's in striking distance.
He's there. He's a beast.
He's well,
trying,
minus four.
Trying to get those future
minus
odds four. Right now.
They're not there yet.
Oh. Dude's a machine.
Well, just check it out. So, John. Baseball. Let's talk a little bit about baseball, you know, and the field. Who do you think is going to win the National League Cy Young?
Well, if it were today, it'd be Ryu.
He's in the field at minus 110. I was looking at this today. Ryu's in the field. Soroka from Atlanta.
Yeah, Soroka would be my next one.
Yeah, and these are the two of the three top ERA leaders in
baseball. They're both under two, aren't they?
Yeah, 1.36 and 1.92. There's three people. Ordozy is the other guy in the American League. The field for the American League is plus 250, and you get Ordozy in the field. I mean, I'm looking at the field, and I think there's some value
there's
to some of this.
Some value.
You know, and the reason I'm doing this is because I'm. It seems like the year of the long shot, the Blues, the Raptors, Tiger coming back and winning a major. You know, so is it a trend here? You know, because a lot of these guys are so much live. Charlie Morton for Tampa Bay, he's plus 450 to win the American League Cy Young.
And he's so solid, that guy. But it's, you know, there's a lot of time between. I mean, even Scherzer's still lurking here. So
yes,
and
Scherzer,
he wins it every year.
He's only at plus $2 right now.
Yeah,
but it goes back to what you said, John. Ryu,
it's to lose right now.
It is,
and he's in the field,
and he's playing on a team that's winning. So you know, some voters are going to take that into consideration.
Yeah.
That he's probably going to end up on the team with either the best or the second best record in baseball when it's all said and done for the regular season. So you know, I'm with you, John. I think
it's true. A great regular season team.
Great regular season team. Who's going to win the World Series, John?
Is
it going to be Dodgers Astros?
No, it's going to be. Yeah, it is. It's going to be Twins.
Okay, I could see that.
It's going to be Twins-Dodgers.
Twins-Dodgers? So you think the Twins are going to over? So Twins?
No,
are,
I think the Astros are the best team.
Twins are 1-50 to win the American League Central right now. 1-50.
That's amazing.
Houston's 1-30 to win. Yeah. I mean, here we are. The Twins were 77 games, 67 games into the season. The Twins have an 11-game lead.
Yankees haven't even been healthy.
Houston
yet.
Has a 9.5 game lead. It's just crazy.
Most of these races are. I mean,
the Dodgers, that 9.5 game lead.
No one's catching the Dodgers. No one's catching the.
How
the
big
Twins.
Of a slump do the Dodgers have to go in not to get there, Josh?
I don't know. Let's find out.
They almost did. I mean, they've given up those leads before.
So, who's going to win the World Series, Josh?
Like I said, because already the races appear to be.
Dodgers got to win one of these.
Lopsided. I would say, as it stands right now, everything I've seen sort of indicates Houston's the best team.
Who's going to win?
Would it be a surprise?
Who's going to win the home run title?
Luke Voit.
Aaron Judge.
Someone on that team.
Yelich.
Yeah, Yelich.
Oh, that's right. He leads the league.
He's plus 150.
How about Bellinger?
Bellinger's plus 450.
Dude is just a stud.
Bellinger plus 450. He's got 22 home runs. He's three behind Yelich right now.
Yelich has the ballpark advantage for sure. Big time. Although, Dodger Stadium, that ball's flying these days. It's not like it was in the old days.
I think the value is certainly – maybe you take – you know what you do here, guys? You take Yelich and Bellinger.
Or someone kidnaps Bellinger and Ryu and Kershaw and Turner.
You mean they just trade him to the Giants? You're just trying to say trade him to the Giants?
And Peterson. That team is so loaded. And what's funny is, as a Giants fan, you know, I don't enjoy this. But this Dodger team's really fun to watch. It's just as a baseball team.
I
enjoy watching them.
I hate Turner.
I hate all those guys.
No, I hate Turner.
No, I trust me.
I don't mind the other ones. I just don't like Turner.
But Cody Bellinger's such a beautiful baseball player. The way he plays, now that they've let him just settle in to play right field instead of going from first base to center field to right field, he knows every day he's the right fielder. Look what he's doing out there.
Right field hitting third, right?
He's unbelievable.
Is he at third?
Yeah, usually. Yeah. They still kind of tweak. Justin Turner hits third a lot, and he'll hit fourth. They tweak that a little bit, but just the position-wise, he's just taken off. I don't think it's him being comfortable. I don't think it's an accident that he's got like a 6 WAR already. He's an unbelievable baseball player.
Josh, what horse were you looking at?
You got to go with horse 3 right there for you.
AK Slick. AK Slick.
13-1.
I'll take Whip Nene.
AK Slick, and he won his last race.
Whip,
he's on fire.
Aw, change of horse. By Ted Topaz. That's crazy. Dell Dayton.
I'm taking Whip Nene.
13-1. I got AK Slick with Dell Dayton in the saddle. Let's see if Grohlman's responded. He did. Heck, I'm not sure we can change him now. What's the name? I'll figure it out. So anyways, the vice president of William Hill just texts me back. So he goes, he doesn't know. No, we don't want to change him. We want to add him. We need some new horses.
Right.
Don't we, Josh? I mean.
For sure.
Glue Factory. That's from our board man.
It's probably a good thing you can't bet the virtual racing on the William Hill app, because that would probably be trouble. But can you imagine if the races just came up on your screen?
Oh, we talked about that. That'd be amazing.
Keep me away. I don't know how many outlets William Hill have this, but it's like, you could easily get carried away with this hobby, and it's probably good to have limited access to it most of the time.
Make sure you download the William Hill mobile app, Josh, at www.williamhill.us. It's a full-service sports mobile sports app that you can fund with your bank account, which is dangerous, and you can bet anything. We got 30 seconds. So college football lines are out week one. Week one NFL lines are out. John, we got about 20 seconds. Anything that you want to add other than you hope all the Dodgers get traded?
I just want to see the Dodgers not win the World Series. That's really all I care about in this world these days.
All right. You can follow the program at Kenny B, ESPN Sports Handicapping on Facebook. Josh Nagel at sportsline.com. Make sure you do all your wagering with William Hill. See you next week. Same time, same place, ESPN 94.5.
Thanks for joining us for the William Hill Sports Show. Be sure to tune in again next Friday at 5 p.m. for all the action. This is KUUB Sun Valley, ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.